You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
So let's turn over to Chairman of the American Conservative Union, Matt Schlapp, and find out how it is that the president's operating these days. Matt, good morning, sir.
Hey, Matt.
Vince, great to be with you again.
Nice to have you. So tell us, what was your impression? I don't know if you saw the meeting yesterday with the president, but what's your impression of how the president has been operating on guns, especially with Democrats in the room yesterday?
You know, I was at the White House for some meetings while that was going on. And was able to watch some of it as well. And I find it fascinating, the way the president does business. This is the man I got to know a little bit before he ran for president. He loves to have a conversation. He loves to ask people their opinions. He loves to, you know, conduct those kind of discussions. And I think for some conservatives like myself, there are some things that are said that make us, you know, a wee bit uncomfortable for sure. But by the same token, there's something uniquely American about just trying to solve a big problem. My guess is most Americans who watch that think that it's refreshing.
Yeah, I watched it. It was like an NRA recruitment drive yesterday for me. I was like, holy cow, like some of the things coming out of this meeting must be stimulating memberships today. Specifically, here's the one that really jumped out at me, was Mike Pence was talking about, hey, we can take weapons, but we have to properly adjudicate. We have to go through the due process first. The president said, well, no, actually, let's flip that. I'd rather take the guns first and then do due process. That's just not constitutional.
Well, you need due process throughout the whole time. I mean, this is America, and there's a due process. I don't think the president was using due process with its, you know, appropriate definition. I think what he was saying is if we know that there is somebody who's ready to commit an act of violence, we got to get on top of that. Mm-hmm. I think that's what he was talking about. I really think when it comes to this question of people who have mental deficiencies, I think it's not just obviously that. It's a question of, are you prone to violence?
Well, Matt,
and when you put those two together, I think most Americans say, yeah, it's okay to ban those people from owning an arsenal of weapons.
Well, Matt, to that point, I mean, I'd like to believe the president will start emphasizing the process failures that resulted in the school shooting. I mean, we're talking about his criticism of Jeff Sessions, rightly so. He's been critical of the sheriff down there for being a political hack. I'd like to see him focus more on that. Do you think he will at some point?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what happens at these things is, just like on immigration, is he starts having a very vigorous bipartisan conversation, and he's in regular contact with, you know, leaders in the Second Amendment movement, and he's also in regular contact with people in law enforcement, and he will continue to push an agenda. And the number one piece of that agenda is hardening schools, taking basic security precautions at schools. I mean, what's amazing to me is, you know, I just dropped my kids off at school, and there's an armed off-duty police guard that brings us all in as we do the drop-off. And when the school bell rings, he gets in his car and he drives away. And I think there's a lot of parents that are looking at that and saying, we don't need the off-duty patrolmen for the drop-off. We need them while they're in school.
Right.
And we need to make sure that there's security cameras and that the doors are hardened. And, you know, we got to take some basic steps. My guess is that's a piece of this, including more money for quicker background checks that we're going to be able to get done.
Matt, I want to ask you real quickly to recap, if you will, CPAC, and you think its accomplishments.
Sure.
Did you feel, first of all, do you feel like this was a successful CPAC? And also, did the goal of sort of getting conservatives all together on the same page, if that was a goal, was that accomplished here?
Yeah, basically, we listened to one of Ronald Reagan's important speeches, and our theme was a time for action. You know, conservatives always wish about the time when they might have the authority to do things. Well, we got to stop wishing because we actually have that authority. And so that was our mission at CPAC, and I do think it was successful. My guess is it's not a humble statement, but I think it was probably one of our best CPACs ever, maybe our best CPAC ever. They have the president, the vice president, half the cabinet, you know, all the major leaders and people up there talking about what we're actually going to get done is incredibly important, because in a presidency, Vince, as you know, you only have so much time when you have the ability to get big things done. We're in year two. There's too many congressional Republicans who want to play stall ball. That is just not where Donald Trump comes from. He wants to push, and I'm glad he wants to push, and I think conservatives around the country want us to push, just like Obama pushed for 8 long years.
Yeah, the president in peak Trump form at CPAC last week.
Let me ask
about his other things that he was trying to get accomplished, because the White House is in a state of public disarray
just
at the moment, just because things are moving around. Tell us how pivotal or how essential, as somebody who knows about this, how essential is Hope Hicks to the White House and her relationship there now that she's resigned?
Look, as I told you, I was there for some meetings. There was no panic. There was calm. Yes, but I will tell you, it's obvious this is big news. The president has, cares a lot for Hope Hicks. He relies on her a lot. And I do think it's hard for a president when somebody who they rely on so much decides to exit. And I think it's normal for these things to happen. These jobs are all-encompassing. They take every moment of your day. You never really kind of get a chance to step away from it. And so it's a logical decision on her behalf. But it will be tough for him. But I don't get this. There's a lot of reporting about how there's panic or whatever.
There's always that.
It is calm. The people there who came from the outside are figuring it out, and they're figuring out these tough jobs. He's brought some other people in who actually have a lot of Washington experience. They're hitting their stride. They're gelling. I think the general has done a great job of bringing order back to the West Wing.
Yes.
And I think the president is more comfortable in his own skin as president. I think at CPAC you saw that when he even made jokes about his bald spot. When did you ever hear Donald Trump do that?
Right.
He's more comfortable in the job. He's figured out the job more. And I actually think if they can get this all pulled together, we can get great things done even before the midterm.
All right. The resume you just described of people from the outside and people with Washington experience sure sounds a lot like your wife, Mercedes Schlapp. I know she's working in the White House. And here's the deal. Matt, between you and I. At some point, CNN is going to break this news. They're going to have the scoop that Mercedes Schlapp is the new communications director for the White House. The last thing you or I want is CNN to break this
news.
So do the world a favor right now and help us out here on Mornings on the Mall.
Hey, Vince, the first thing I have to do is make sure that I keep the job of husband. Okay? that's my number one job. I do think you make a good point. Why does the White House break so much news with their enemies?
Yes.
My guess, whoever they pick for this new communications director is going to be very sensitive.
And a very lovely woman who's married to Matt Schlapp.
She's awesome. I love her. She's very talented. We have 5 little kids. The older one's not so little anymore. she's got a lot going on in her life.
That's right.
I will tell you this, as a woman who's in a senior level position, she is respected by the president, and she really enjoys working for him.
All right.
And it's a great environment for her, and she's having a blast, even though it's awfully tough.
Yeah, see, so a whole bunch of reasons why maybe she'd be a good pick. Anyway, Matt, thank you for putting up with an uncomfortable question this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
A lot going on in Washington. I'm Vince Colonnese. Alongside this morning, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, in for the vacationing Mary Walter.
Greetings, Sebastian. Vince.
Nice to have you here. Greetings to you. Let's talk about the president, because that's what we talk about in Washington, D.C. and especially this president, because this week he's had a very active one. And Sebastian, I like having you here because, you have been a forceful defender of the president of the United States. You worked for him in the Trump administration, and you've spoken on his behalf many times since. This week has been, I think, a curiosity for a lot of conservatives, one in which, especially on guns, let's start there before we get to the other issues, where people have raised their eyebrows and gone, well, wait a second, that's – some of what he said is not constitutionally sound, for instance. The shorthand of saying, get the guns first, then do due process, seems like glossing over in a meaningful way things that matter. That's the reverse order in the way things are supposed to happen. Now, I've heard from people since then when he says stuff like that, people who defend the president here are like, well, no, look, what he's being overly simplistic, but the truth is you need probable cause to seize guns. There's an element of due process that's kind of underway already before you go in there and grab weapons, and then the actual court process can play out. So there's due process all the way through. But still, to hear the president say stuff like that, it worries people. It worries me, because I hear stuff like that. I'm like, you know what? Those are the words that we would be beating down the doors on the White House if Barack Obama uttered them.
Right. But again, everything has to be taken in context. And I don't remember who said it, but there's a difference between taking the president literally and taking him seriously. You have to listen to what he said at CPAC last week. I was in the room. It was a capacity crowd, thousands and thousands of people. And he stopped. It was a masterful speech because halfway through it, he said, "This speech is so boring." And he went off auto cue. He went off teleprompter and spoke from the heart. And he looked at the audience and he said, "We will never let them take away your Second Amendment rights." That's the president speaking off teleprompter to the CPAC audience. Now, what he said in that was a very freewheeling meeting. That wasn't a scripted meeting.
Yes.
It was in front of cameras. What he said has to, again, be taken in context. Listen to what the vice president said to him.
So when you watched that meeting this weekend, what did you think was happening? When you assess it, when you look at it and you go, "I know what's going on. I know what he's up to." What is that thought?
It's the art of the deal. That meeting is, and this is when I just laugh at anyone who floats his ideas of the mental incapacity of the president. Watch him in those scenarios. When there's no script and when the cameras are on, he runs that conversation, right? He gets everybody engaged. He makes them feel this is your moment to get a little bit of time in front of the camera. But who controlled that event? It wasn't the Democrats screaming for gun control. It was the president of the United States. And he had them eating out of the palm of his hand.
I guess, but the couple of things jumped out at me that that bugged the hell out of me.
One
of them was going after Pat Toomey and saying that he's beholden to the NRA. Or that you're scared of the NRA. That's why you didn't include an age raise to 21 on rifles when the bill that he's focusing on is about background checks. It doesn't have anything to do with other other elements of the law. And he basically turned Pat Toomey into a showpiece. He used him as an expression of, "Hey, Republicans are scared of the NRA. I'm not." He basically tried to do that. I thought that was I don't know what he was trying to accomplish exactly. Maybe just to prove that he's not beholden to the NRA, but he's doing it at Toomey's expense. And I thought that was unfair, whatever you think of his background check bill. Also, he entertained the notion of including Dianne Feinstein's assault weapons ban in Toomey's bill. He said, "Hey, why don't you put elements of her bill in your bill?" For what purpose?
At the end of the day,
what is the process there?
Yeah. At the end of the day, look, I'm pretty active on Twitter,
yes.
A lot of followers. I watch the people overreact too quickly. And my one word of warning is always the same. Has he given away your gun rights? Has he done, when it comes to the key issues, has he said we're not going to build the wall? Is this 7 years from now? At the end of the day, whatever the president does in front of the cameras,
right,
with Pat Toomey, with Dianne Feinstein,
yep,
really doesn't matter.
Here's why it matters.
Go
ahead.
At the end of the day, you don't judge a human being on what they say. I'm sorry.
Okay.
You judge them on what they do.
I agree with you, but here's why it matters this week to me.
Uh-huh.
Walmart just raised the age at which you can purchase a weapon to 21.
Right.
And in what cover did they do it? Under the cover of the fact that the leader of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party in uniformity are both agreeing that we should raise the age at which you can purchase rifles. There is nobody dissenting among those two groups.
Let me ask you.
You know what I mean?
This
is a move, right, of the Overton window. It's just basically saying, look, culturally, we've decided this is an allowable portion at which we can kind of infringe a little bit on the Second Amendment right to own a weapon.
Hand on heart, Vince, do you really think Walmart did that because Donald Trump said so?
No. But here's what I think. I think
and who's going to pay the price?
I think their ability to second guess that decision just absolutely went out the window. I mean, like their notion of internally being like, what kind of pushback are we going to get? You know what? Not that much. The president just voiced support for this policy.
At the end of the day, again, it goes back to what's really happening on the ground. I think the people are going to pay the greatest penalty for the decisions this week are the Walmarts of the world, are the airlines, are the Hertzes. It's not going to be, the gun owners of the world. And I know one thing. I tweeted out today, sign up for the NRA, And when I tweeted out, I had to find another URL. Why? Because the NRA membership URL was down because they couldn't handle how many members were being created
that's right.
this week.
In one sense, the president did run an NRA drive this week through that meeting. More from Sebastian Gorka in a moment, because I have all sorts of questions for you about what you think of the White House's activities this week. All right, we're here with Sebastian Gorka joining us this morning as our guest co-host all morning, and This week at the White House, there's also been news of staffing changes. And we've seen this from time to time. This feels like if we're going to mark a calendar for staff changes, this would be one week where you mark it. The big one this week is Hope Hicks leaving. And she was – describe for us if you can, how close is Hope Hicks to the President of the United States?
Very. One of the closest non-family members to the president that there are. And remember, she was there from the get-go when I first met candidate Trump in the summer of 2015. There were two people in the building that mattered, and that was Hope Hicks and Corey Lewandowski. That was it in New York.
Do you get the impression, so there's been some report, there's conflicting reporting on this, of course, as usual, on everything out of the Trump White House, but is it a burnout phase for her? Is she just overworked, or are there things that she did or was involved in that might be, okay, you know what, this is inconvenient, it's probably time to go?
I don't want to overly speculate based upon, you know, recent events. I would say a combination of the, I ignore, you know, if CNN writes it, if the Washington Post writes it, and this is the explanation, then I immediately go 180 the opposite.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's burnout combined potentially with the fallout of the Rob Porter story. Those two things are more than enough for her to say,
How essential was she to the fact that the president likes to speak to the New York Times with some regularity? Like, is she the person who makes that decision?
I don't like to give away all the inside secrets, but let's just say it this way. She was crucial to the interface between the president and what would some people would call the fake news industrial complex.
It's an interesting position to be in, the comms director. I'm glad to find out a little bit more.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. More of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Right now, joined by Tucker Carlson, anchor of Tucker Carlson Tonight on the Fox News Channel, the appropriately named Tucker Carlson Tonight. Good morning, Tucker.
Hey, Vince. Good morning.
Nice to have you here, sir. Yeah, I want to talk about your show a little bit, which, by the way, congratulations. We're seeing ratings numbers yet again coming in. You and Hannity, the most watched cable news programs in February. I know you care about that. You did it. You've done well. So congratulations.
Well, thank you, and you named the show. Vince Colonies came up with the name of the show.
Yeah, it was the easiest name in the world to come up with.
Well, I know, but I didn't come up with it. You did, so I'm grateful for that tonight.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to start appending tonight to everything I say, just to name it. all right, Tucker, you've got on that Tucker Carlson Tonight program, you've got a plan which is definitely unique. You're blazing a trail because no one else in the media is going to do a story on men and the culture in America, and yet you are. Why is that? What is it about?
Well, we're doing the month of March. Every week we're doing a month-long series on what's going on with men, the decline of men. I've got, you know, a number of children, male and female, and they've grown up now, and I noticed for the last 10 years that all of my girls' friends are sort of right on target. They're all going to Stanford, and they have a plan, and a lot of my son's friends are smoking weed and playing video games. And so I sort of looked into this, and the numbers show a striking and growing disparity between how men and women are doing. I mean, pick a measurement. Girls are much more likely to go to college and graduate. The strong majority of PhDs are given to women. The majority of managers are women. Women get more driver's licenses. Single women buy homes at twice the rate of single men. I mean, just women's IQs are rising faster than men. There are a lot of ways to measure this. So when you really dig down, you see that not only are women pulling ahead, and that's great, I've got three daughters, I'm for it, but men are really stagnating. The male suicide rate, vastly higher than the female one and growing. The OD rates, over 70% of all drug ODs are men. And you sort of wonder, like, what is going on here, and how long has this been going on? And so we're digging into it now, but the truth is it's been going on for at least 20 years. And for a bunch of different reasons, some of them political, it's being ignored. And it's bad for everyone. I mean, my gut instinct is if you create a society in which expressions of masculinity are banned and punished starting at a young age when boys who act traditionally male are medicated so they will act less male, there are consequences to that. You hurt people when you do that, and you hurt your society. By the way, you hurt women when you do that because men and women need each other, and women need good men, and so you want to produce as many as you can. And it's a very complex problem. I don't fully understand it. I don't want to pretend that I do, but I know that it is a problem, and it's being ignored, and it shouldn't be.
You know, when you talk to kind of people about you hear all the time from people who express like how things have changed since they were kids. And it seems like as a culture, kind of to your point, that for boys, things have become much more restrictive, whereas for girls, they've become much more permissive. So this notion that for young boys, you know, you talk to anybody's parents, talk about like the incidents of, say, just like average fist fight that might happen on a school campus. Nobody thought of it as a big deal. It wasn't like anybody was bringing weapons. Everyone left, you know, a couple bruises, a couple scrapes, but, you know, there was a winner and there was a loser and everyone kind of walked away. Everybody fine. Nowadays, that's a felony. I mean, we're getting to the point where we're over-litigating this stuff and everything is – there's, like, actually no ways to get these sort of, like, nonsense aggressions out as a child.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, look, I'm against violence. I'm not, you know, in any way endorsing violent behavior. I don't like it. On the other hand, you know, if you said to girls that femininity was wrong and that their kind of instinctive expressions of being female were bad and you were going to punish them for that, you would really warp and damage women. And by the way, that is a real, like, there are cultures that do that in the Middle East or Pakistan where women are crushed for being women. And nobody thinks that's a good thing. Well, we're creating the mirror image of that in our country. And it's really, really hurting people. And again, I think it's more complicated than that. I mean, there are probably a lot of things going on here, but that's definitely one of them.
Well, I can tell you, you're going to have, I'm sure you're going to have debates on this subject on your show, and you'll have liberals on there who are kind of going to lean into the classic arguments that they've been making, at least over the last decade, which is, this is silly. Men, especially white men, have all of the privilege. Everyone else is disadvantaged, and they need to be given more opportunities. It's men who have got all the money, they've got all the advantages. What are you complaining about, Tucker?
Well, I would say to them, look, drive from Washington, D.C. to Pittsburgh one day during the day and look out the window as you do and tell me if this thing called white privilege is real. I mean, let's be actually the only group in America whose life expectancy is shrinking is working class white Americans. Now, I'm not doing the victim thing here. I'm just saying those are what the numbers tell us. Those are the data. So let's stop lying and let's stop letting our political beliefs or our instinct for power get in the way of acknowledging reality. And the reality is that there are huge sections of our country that are hurting. By the way, that's why Trump got elected. Happy countries don't elect Donald Trump president. Desperate countries do. And this country is really desperate in a lot of ways. And the demographic that's under attack is in trouble. I mean, it's just like, The social science shows that. This is not like I'm not standing up for white men because I'm a white man. I don't feel that way. I don't believe in tribalism at all. I'm just telling you that the numbers show it. And by the way, a normal, healthy society would look at the suicide rate for men, and it's by far the highest for white men, it is, and say, wow, we've got a problem. And by the way, if you're 50 years old, ask anybody who is 50 years old, ask a simple question. Do you know anyone who's killed himself in the last 3 or 4 years? And you won't find someone who says no, because the suicide rate is really high for that group, really high. So what is that? It's not a sign of health. It's a sign of disintegration.
In the political conversation, you know, one of the considerations is the Democrats have missed this. And that's, you mentioned this is the reason Trump was elected. We've seen in the last 24 hours a new story about the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee in the hours after the Vegas shooting encouraged its members not to politicize the tragedy, but instead to you know, issue thoughts and prayers and just kind of like wait to see what had happened before they issue statements. Yet it seems the Democratic Party is kind of being pulled by its own radicalism on the left in order to engage in these subjects in a way that doesn't necessarily connect with Americans in the middle of the country.
Well, that's totally true. And by the way, the DCCC advice was wise advice and humane advice. And advice that we could all use, which is slow down and, you know, like let the tragedy sink in before you try to make a talking point out of it. Mm-hmm. But look, the Democratic Party, like the Republican Party, like all parties in a democracy, is dragged forward by its own voters. I mean, that's what democracy is, actually. And it's sometimes good and sometimes bad. But in this specific case, the Democratic base is far more radical than the Democrats in Washington. So if you look at Chuck Schumer and think he's the worst person in the world, boy, you don't have perspective, because Chuck Schumer is actually the most moderate Democrat you're going to meet.
Yeah, Dianne.
And we're going to find that out in the midterm.
Dianne Feinstein finding that out right now in California as Democrats in the state refuse to endorse her. I want to talk more about the politics of everything that's going on now back in Washington in a moment. We're going to hold Tucker Carlson here.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
All right, we're chatting with Tucker Carlson of the Fox News Channel. Tucker, the gun debate now raging on in Washington, D.C., because the president's set to have a bipartisan meeting today with members of Congress to discuss steps forward. Now, we've heard a couple things come out of the White House in the direction of actually gun restrictions, the idea of raising the age to 21 at which to purchase a gun. Sort of, what do you make of the White House's position so far in all of this?
I mean, they've been, look, I mean, ask yourself, have Republicans moved from their traditional position? Yes. Have Democrats? Not one inch. So in the wake of a shooting like this, the obvious question is not, how did he do it? We know that. He did it with a firearm. The question is, why did he do it? Why would a 19-year-old want to kill 17 strangers? Why would you do something like that? What about our society is producing people who want to kill strangers in public? Not about how. It's like the question after 9/11. It's like, why would they do this? Why did 19 hijackers die in order to kill 3,000 Americans? Like, why did that happen?
Right.
No one even considered it, really. You know, because they hate our freedoms. Oh, yeah, okay, good answer. Like, we have a problem as a society with facing the most basic and essential and important question, which is why?
Well, look at Vegas. Look at Las Vegas. We don't know anything about Vegas still, and there's like
and
a total lack of curiosity about it.
All we know is that he had some kind of stupid bump stock. Anybody knows anything about guns will tell you a bump stock, it sounds scary. It makes your gun less accurate. Okay, fine, ban bump stock. Is that going to save a single life? No. Nobody even thinks it. It's purely a cosmetic palliative designed to make the rest of us not think about why this is happening in the first place. So, yeah, whatever, raise the age or make up some stupid solution nobody really believes in and call it a day and pretend you accomplished something. But where's the conversation about why this is happening? Look, I don't know the answer. I've got a lot of theories on it. But the fact there's no conversation and Democrats are totally resistant to even having one and Republicans are like too afraid and dumb to even talk about it, it's actually terrifying, because a society that can't ask the essential questions, can't even talk about them, is a truly dysfunctional society. It freaks me out thinking about it, actually.
Well, Tucker, I wanted to ask you about the Parkland shooting survivors, because obviously they've been some really effective spokespeople for this gun control movement right now. And there's a school of thought on the left that if you rebut the Parkland school shooting survivors, then you're somehow smearing them or you're attacking them and that they're off limits. What do you think about how Republicans can go about not criticizing those children, but rebutting their ideas?
I mean, I think it's probably best just to kind of make a rational case without reference to, you know, who's making the counter case. In other words, you know, everyone feels terrible for the survivors of that and certainly for the victims. It doesn't, of course, mean that they have a right to make public policy for the rest of us, you know, without any kind of input from, like, the other 320 million Americans who live here. I think it's probably best not to engage as a tactical matter. But again, I think wise leaders have an obligation to push the conversation back to where it needs to be, which is what has gone wrong that this is happening. I mean, there has been an absolute increase in mass shooting. It's not because there are more weapons. There aren't. Fewer households have them. The AR-15 has been around for more than 50 years, commercially available. This was not a feature of my childhood, these shootings. It is a feature of our modern life. So what the hell, let's just like rationally, as social scientists, let's assess this. And what is it? What has changed? It's not gun ownership, it's something else. And nobody can even, I don't know, do you think that's demented that we're not having that conversation?
Completely. Completely. Well, I mean, some are. We've attempted to here, and I know you do it frequently. But you're right, as a society, it's not even the beginning of a conversation on that subject. I want to, you know, touch on, she mentioned, Sarah mentioned the Parkland teens, the survivors here. we know that it's not just them, though. There are voices who are involved here that are exploiting them. And you've got Bloomberg's groups, gun control groups, who are clearly out now. BuzzFeed News with a report on this in the last 24 hours about how they are helping to support them logistically and with facts, all sorts of things, in order to help them with their gun control push. And also, you had CNN's Jeff Zucker in the last 24 hours claiming that their network town hall last week, featuring survivors of the Parkland, Florida shooting, quote, presented both sides, and that criticism of the event as a gun control rally is silly.
Well, I mean, I think on the subject of guns, you make a huge mistake if you imagine that the other side is acting in good faith. I mean, if you really cared about reducing so-called gun violence, you would use the data to inform your position, and
yes,
you would say we had, for example, an assault weapons ban for 10 years. It was studied exhaustively. It didn't work. There's no debate about that. So maybe we need a new solution. But they're still talking about it. So maybe the goal isn't to reduce gun violence. Maybe the goal is to control the population. And that's clearly the goal. I mean, I do this debate every night, and I don't want to believe that, but after long experience, 15 years of arguing this, I believe that the gun control side is interested in disarming the population for reasons other than making it safer. I don't think you can reach another conclusion. So, I don't even play along anymore. I mean, the truth is, they're not serious about this subject. They don't actually know the facts. They don't want to learn the facts. They just don't think you ought to have a gun. Only people in authority ought to be armed. That's their view.
So this is why there are no gun beats, let's say, at your average daily newspaper, because nobody actually cares to follow them.
Well, they don't know anything about guns, and they don't. Look, if you really cared, you would be rational about it, but they're not. They just don't think. They think that the people in charge should be armed. You should be wholly dependent upon those people for your safety. And they just disagree. Like, they're authoritarian in their outlook, obviously. I mean, I'm not attacking anybody. I'm just noting what, if you were from another planet and watching this debate, you'd be like, oh, one side doesn't believe that the population ought to be able to defend itself and ought to be autonomous enough to be armed. Like, that's what they believe. It's really clear.
Yeah. Have you found, in the 15 seconds we have left, have you found, as you've been debating this, that liberals are more willing to admit that position now?
I think they are. When they talk about Australia, they're not talking about a buyback program. That wasn't what it was. It was gun confiscation. It was the disarming of the civilian population.
Yes.
That's what they want. They're saying it. I'm glad they're saying it, because that's true.
All right. Tucker Carlson, you can catch him every night at 8 o'clock. The ratings are great. Keep keeping them great. Thank you, Tucker. Really appreciate it, sir.
Thanks a million.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Vince Collin is here with Dr. Sebastian Gorka, in for the vacation, and Mary Walter. Dr. Gorka, thank you.
My pleasure.
We've got Ed Henry of the Fox News Channel joining us now as well. Ed, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
The president has had a very active week.
Yep.
And so the gun control conversation that he was having earlier this week got a lot of people nervous, and especially conservatives who were like, wow, the president seems to be heading in the direction of gun control regulations of some kind.
Yeah.
But he had a meeting yesterday with the NRA, and that bore some fruit as well. What happened?
Well, yeah, I think that was a little bit of cleanup on aisle three because of the comments on Wednesday. You're right. I mean, look, these televised meetings the president does, there's good and bad to it, right? I mean, I think that the key is that there's transparency. I mean, we rarely see this from a president, you know, in either party. They usually bring you in for 3 minutes at the beginning of the meeting and everyone says, you know, boilerplate stuff. This president brings the cameras in. He did it on immigration. He's now done it on guns. And lets everybody see how the sausage is made. Sometimes it's not pretty, and I think he got a little ahead of his skis on the comment about, you know, he so wants to make sure that people who are mentally ill don't have guns that he kind of misspoke about due process, and let's take the gun first and then go through due process, and everyone, you know, wants to jump on that one comment and not look at the big picture, which is, I think, twofold. One, what he's really talking about mostly is enhanced background checks. There seems to be some growing consensus around that, and he's showing leadership on that. And the other point I'd make is, when this tragedy first happened, think about the narrative. I mean, the left jumped all over it, and it became, you know, this is all the NRA's fault, Donald Trump's fault, and before the facts came in. And then as the facts came in, it turned out, well, the sheriff wasn't really telling the whole truth. There were some deputies in the parking lot hiding, you know, who were trained and armed and could have maybe helped at least mitigate the situation, if not stop it, much, much quicker. And so I just think the narrative has flipped from where it all started, and the president is trying to say, where can we find some consensus?
Is your impression, Ed, that last night the damage control was successful?
It sounds like it, because Chris Cox, who, as you know, is one of the senior officials at the NRA, he's the one who kind of revealed this by tweeting, you know, just met with the president and the vice president of the Oval Office, and Chris Cox said, we're all on the same page on due process. We're on the same page with this. And so, look, you know, people after a meeting like this, as I noted earlier, will always, no matter who's in power, you know, spin and say everything's great. But I do think when you've got a senior guy at the NRA coming out and saying, look, we're back on the same page, I believe they are.
So that fire may have been put out a little bit. But one other fire that's burning this week is the president tweeting about Jeff Sessions. He's unhappy that he referred looks into Obama-era surveillance abuses to the inspector general at the Justice Department rather than look into it himself or have his team do it. So, you know, that happens, and then Sessions tries to fight back in public, basically saying that he's going to do his job with integrity. And then Jeff Sessions was at the opioid summit yesterday at the White House. Did anything come of that?
It didn't really look like they had much of an interaction, but it was interesting to me that the president wanted to, even though this was sort of Jeff Sessions' event, drop by and get the attention, maybe show who's boss, who's in charge. But look, I think the tweet a couple days back was certainly awkward. You know, I mean, going after your own attorney general, this has happened before. It adds to this narrative that the media loves to feed about chaos in this White House, and the president poured a little gasoline on that.
All right, well, that's a succinct description of what's going on in the news. Is why Ed Henry is the chief national correspondent for the Fox News Channel. Ed, thanks so much for joining us here.
Good to talk to you. Have a good day.
You've been listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listen Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. to hear the show live on 105.9 FM WMAL.